Hi Aida, wenn ich morgens beim Yoga die Sonne grüße und sie abends mit einem Sundowner wieder verabschiede, wenn ich nur einmal packen muss, aber 5 Länder erleben kann, wenn ich jeden Tag an einem neuen Ort aufwache und mich dank dir trotzdem wie zu Hause fühle, dann kann ich uns kaum erwarten. Entdecke mehr auf aida.de oder in deinem Reisebüro.
Town is in session. Welcome, everybody, to the Nerd Melt Theater in Hollywood, California. How are you tonight? Fantastic. Please welcome to the stage the mayor of Harmontown, Mr. Dan Harmon. You can sit around and wait for the phone to ring. He's doing a little dance. A little side to side. Is Peter going side to side? His hands are on his hips.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
Sorry. Sorry about that, podcast listeners.
You can't just dance on a podcast. You can, and you should.
That's like the when people who are big fans of LPs, that was the cracks, pops, and whistles of listening to old school audio recordings, metaphorically.
Yeah.
You don't see the little kicky dance when you listen to a Harmontown podcast. You have to come here to Nerd Melt.
Your dances, historically speaking, are very kicky based. There's lots of little toe kicks to the side.
I'm a little baby. And I'm getting prouder of it as I get older, which is good in a Kubrickian sense, because as we know, like, we do become babies as we get older. In my early 30s, there was a shame of the fact that I was a baby, because you'd go out with women. Sooner or later, they find out you're a baby. And they actually say the words, you're a baby. Or you say them. I'm a baby. I found a girlfriend who is okay with me being a baby. I specifically enjoy being what she calls a little cloud baby.
Would you explain?
I'd be happy to. Because we're in a good mood tonight. I have a big down comforter in my room, and it's white. And I like to crawl under it and hold it up to my chin and make a little baby face. And Aaron makes a sound that is exactly half horror, half orgasm.
Horror?
Yeah. Well, because she's going out with a baby, and she wants a baby.
But she doesn't want to have to fuck it.
No. But it's like it's making her dignity and her ovaries like fight each other and explode.
It's like a Twilight Zone. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I can't imitate it, but I can make a little baby face in bed that will make Aaron go, yeah.
Well,
I'm in a good mood because I got a call from my doctor today, and I got really really really. Like bad news from him.
Congratulations.
I had lab work done. Like, you know, they suck the plasma out of your body and then they send it off to a lab and you fill out a clipboard. What do you want checked? I want everything checked. I want to know if I've ever come close to herpes. I want to know if I've eaten waffles. I want to know what my liver's doing. I want to know my kidneys, everything. Just like, okay, this is going to take a while. Okay, fine. Just give it to me. It's time. I'm 39. And it's been a month, and they called me today. There was a mix-up with the phone number, and they finally called me. And it's dark news because I'm in perfect condition. And the reason it's dark is because now I'm going to kill myself. Like because I feel like He-Man. I've done nothing but abuse my body. My doctor called me today and said, your cholesterol is well within allowances. Now, I we're a fat country, so, I prefer to look at ideals. You're 1 point away from the ideal. I think if you do a little bit of exercise, you can knock it down to the ideal. Ideal? Dan, I'm going to go to the Olympics with my cholesterol. My liver's fine. Are you kidding me?
That is a lie. Are you sure he's a doctor? That might not be a doctor.
It may be an elaborate Kettle One
sponsor
con job. Yeah. I walk out of the place and the whole facade of the Beverly Hills Hospital falls down and yeah. it becomes a Kettle One factory.
It becomes a truck and drives off.
Well, it worked. I'm gonna do a little bit of exercise from now on and. Knock that. There's the LDL and the HDL. Doesn't matter. Who cares? Here's what I care about. I'm in perfect shape, Jeff. I'm a perfect specimen.
Let's have a.
I'm a super baby.
A super cloud baby.
There's nothing wrong with me. My blood sugar is low. I can't get diabetes. I could eat a million Twinkies. I can't get diabetes. It's impossible.
That's not true. No, you can get diabetes at some point. If we live long enough, we'll all get diabetes.
You're not a doctor.
It's an age onset disease. If you live to be 100, you're going to get diabetes.
If I live to be 100, they're going to have laser spiders that go in your veins and cure your diabetes.
Dan, we're 200 years away from laser spider technology.
We're 100 years away from laser spiders.
You're talking like you know, that all of a sudden you know a lot about sci-fi.
Oh, thank you for the segue, Jeff. I went to the Chicago...
Also, not only can you not see our kicky dance, you couldn't see my smug satisfaction about that segue. Awesome.
I feel like part of my instinct is because last week what we did is we had, and even people who, unless you were here last week in person, because we haven't podcast that episode yet, you don't know, we brought Spencer up when we embarked on our first D&D campaign with Spencer. Yeah. And... I'll probably let him recap it, but we
I fucking hope so, because I remember we talked about mirrors for a long time.
We were pretty drunk, but we met on a road and we killed some goblins. We went into a cave.
Lots of mirrors and lots of.
And then there was
a lot
of like it was like a puzzle game for baby boomers, like like Myst with a Y. It's like you rotate the mirror, and then there was like a statue that was red, and then there was a shield that was red, and
Spencer,
we were so drunk. And
Spencer, who was our dungeon master, for those of us who are or those of you who are not following the saga of our D&D campaign, he walked up to me outside when people are waiting in line here at Meltdown Comics, and comes up and he goes. He opened up his book and goes, oh shit, I thought I forgot your characters, but I have them. But I forgot my die. I forgot my 20-sided die.
Yeah.
And so we went to the front desk here at the comic book store.
Yeah.
And they were out of them.
Right.
And so he's going to be rolling dice for us on his iPod application tonight.
Oh, really? Because nobody here has a die.
20-sided? No.
Jesus. Okay, really? I think it's shame that's keeping you from admitting that you do. Or ignorance. I think some of you are wearing your shirt from prom night and you forgot you have a 20-sided in your pocket.
Does anybody have a 20-sided die on them right now?
Always keep it on you. You would have been a hero tonight. Well, we'll resume our thing with Spencer. Well, that's what I was struggling with, was do we want to warm up for Spencer or do we want to get him in early so that we're not so drunk that when we get hit with a mirror puzzle, like, you know, that was the problem.
You're the mayor, baby.
All right.
Well, I want to hear a little... Before we bring Spencer up, I want to hear a little bit about your trip because I haven't seen you for 4 days. And
I went to San Francisco and Chicago since the last time we talked about anything. San Francisco, I thought there was an interesting thing. I don't know if podcast listeners, some of you maybe are in San Francisco. There's a guy on the outside the Ferry Building. He's a very old, like very Morgan Freeman-y black gentleman. He's wearing an old kind of like suit, like it's his only suit. Kind of you can sense that he gets up in the morning, puts on his one suit. He gives you a very Morgan Freeman vibe.
What do you mean specifically by a Morgan?
Well, you want him to tell you how to golf or play the clarinet or use the force or be a librarian or love a woman. You want him to
you want a mystical black friend.
Yeah, he exudes that air. He's like he's ancient and he's got a big smile on his face and he's holding a clarinet. And he's got the clarinet case with a recyclable bag in it for tips. And he's got a hat on. And when I walked up to him, Aaron was going to the bathroom. The bathroom line was so long that I got to kind of study this guy for a while. So if you walk past him, all you see is, it's a master of clarinet sitting on the dock of the bay, hanging out.
Watching the tide roll away.
And my God, I wish I was a better person. I wish I had more appreciation for whatever jazzy arts he could impart to me. I was waiting for Aaron so long that I kind of stood behind him and watched what was really happening. He's really just, he knows as much clarinet as I do. Like he kept doing this thing. It was like an SNL sketch. Like he was continually like rereading his clarinet, like while he was talking to people, he would like shout out to people, and then they'd stop and talk to him, and then he was just continually in preparation to play the clarinet. And when I walked up to him, when I arrived at him, it was at the end of an encounter that he was having for like seemingly hours with this old white couple that were like, oh no, oh, we gotta go, I'm sorry, we never got to hear you play, but here's $5. And he's like, oh no, take care of her, oh, I wouldn't want to. And then this other weird encounter happened where a guy walked by. It's like an 80 year old guy with a 50 year old woman. and the clarinet guy said, how's it going out here? He would just shout stuff out at random people. He shouted several things out at me, but I'm Generation X, so I just go, huh, and look at a bird. But like old white people would stop and go like, well, just the weather and the knees and the kneecaps. Ah, like they would have this old person language with the like, oh, Truman never got Dewey. And they would engage each other. It was like ants, you know, like a specific species would like get into it. And so that happened. Looked like he snagged another like old guy who was like this 50-year-old white woman and the old white guy. And the old white guy said, well, this is my daughter. And he said, I could have sworn I thought that was your wife. And then the old guy said, you wish me to have a heart attack? Well, woman this age, you know, that's a good way to wish me to get a heart attack. You know, fucking my daughter.
That's 22% of deaths over the age of 75.
And he kept walking away, and then the clarinet guy, like he waited. It was like a block away. The guy, like, there's no way he was gonna hear him, but he kind of like the gears ground, and he kind of heard him, and then he thought of something to say to him. I bet you wish sometimes she was your wife, though. And then he finally, yeah.
He played String of Pearls.
The 30 minutes that it took Aaron to go to the bathroom at this place because the line was so long, I finally saw this guy finally put this thing to his lips, because I think part of the thing is, you know, he needs to at some point create a seam of like illusion that like he just finished or just started playing clarinet. always just finished. Big. So I was in his blind side, you know, like I was standing behind him, like flanking him and just watching him. And so he put the clarinet to his lips, and I was like, okay, here we go. Like, blow my mind or confirm what I suspect. And he went, who?
That's Artie Shaw.
Scales, I think he was doing, but worse, because he hadn't seen Sound of Music. And then put his prop back down and then just started shouting out everybody on the pier. I don't know if that's, you know, interesting to anybody, but I thought it was very interesting.
The clarinet is a very difficult instrument. There's a guy that lives on my street. I don't know if he lives on my street. There's a mystery person. I went away on a trip to France last year, and for 3 months before I left town, I would hear... And it was start quiet and get louder and louder and louder. And there was a clarinetist that had just taken up like fucking residence on my street. And he would wander around, and I never saw him. And I went out of town. Apparently, he'd taken up residence on my lawn. And actually, a neighbor called the police and took him to jail. The guy went to jail. And I wanted to kill the guy because it was like the clarinet is not an easy instrument to play. It was terrible. And so he went to jail for a while, apparently. Now he's reemerged. I don't know the name of the instrument, but it's the one that you charm a snake with. In the middle of the fucking morning or afternoon, there's a guy.
The cobra phone.
And I finally saw him. He's an old, wizened, gray, bearded guy with a giant clarinet thing with ribbons hanging off of it. It's the worst.
Do you remember the guy? Were you living in Las Vegas when that guy? He was the Forrest Gump of 9/11.
The ranting raving guy.
Like the Persian guy that he was, one day before 9/11.
Not Iranian. Persian.
Every day before leading up to 9/11, because I lived in Las Feliz from 90 whatever to 2001, like just every single day at the same time of day, there would be this guy. You would hear him any place in Las Feliz. He wasn't like homeless, but he was clearly like mentally ill. I think he had a support system, and then the support system would say, "Yes, you can take a walk, Kyle. You can." And then on his walk, it was just an hour a day.
You know, Persian.
Well, you know, I don't want to be like Larry the Cable Guy and give him a name that I'm going to regret, but I don't want to riff a name. I want to assume his name's Kyle.
Xerxes. His name was Xerxes.
Every day at the same time, you would just hear this like in the distance, like because I would be writing with Shrab in my living room, and then you'd just hear from way in the distance here. And there'd be like a Doppler effect because he'd walk past your place like an ice cream man. And it was before 9/11, and it didn't really matter. It was just like oh, that's a different kind of crazy guy. It's better than saying, I want to strangle your children. I can't understand it. It's kind of delicious. I like it. It's like an orange pop-up instead of the traditional vanilla bean. And then fucking, it was so clear. Like 9/11 happened, and because I was living in that same place, and you just like never, ever, that guy vanished. Some white van came and just sucked him up with a vacuum cleaner.
No, I think his family said, Kyle.
Kyle, no more walks. They're watching the news.
As much as we like you to get out of the house once in a while, we don't want you to get killed.
Yeah, they were watching the news of 7-Elevens with American flags draped in the front windows because everyone was terrified of everybody. It was a horrible time. A lot of you were six and don't remember how horrifying it was. I remember in the moments after 9/11, driving with Jeff, my comptroller, down Franklin Avenue over where Birds and UCB is there now. It wasn't there then. And I remember just driving at night and like you couldn't drive. It was exactly like after a hockey game, like where someone won or lost that was significant to the same demographic, like the traffic blockers, because 9/11 happened and there was just the traffic was slow everywhere. You're like, why is traffic slow? Is there a 9/11 happening here too? No, it's just a bunch of 9/11 fans out in the street, and they're like lining the street with some of them with candles. Okay, fine, that's sentimental, that's nice. But I remember seeing like a bunch of dudes with baseball caps on backwards with a bed sheet that said USA on it, a bed sheet that they just grabbed. It's like, like, wait, Steve, grab the bed sheet and write the name of our country on it. It's crucial that we do it now. We're about to lose everything. The towers have gone down. Our beds are next. Let them know on Franklin Avenue that what country this is. And they were chanting or driving. It's like the cars were like this bumper to bumper traffic, gridlock, and it was just people going, USA, 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 USA. And Jeff and I were like coiling down in our seats, going, we're actors and writers. We're dead. The next 10 years is not going to be fun. But then we elected a black man. I don't know. So what did I know?
That was several years later, though.
Society's never finished when you think it is. We're progressive.
Are you gonna?
It seemed that night that we were dead.
Do you have any? What do you think? Obama, Romney? Who do you like? Who do you like, Herman?
Boy, that Romney. He's got pluck. I spent 5 minutes. I couldn't believe. I thought that was a bit. I thought it was a bit that he was actually the finalist, like that he was the new McCain. I thought there was an actual like onion bit or something. Like he says nothing. Like it's insane. He's like a parody of a parody of something that's already a parody. I'm not even. I would characterize myself as being left of what most people would call liberal because I don't. I really don't like the idea that we all accept that government is necessary. Like I it's a bummer, and I know it is to keep everything in place now. But I think that there, you know, like it should be our goal to like go like what? God, can't everybody stop telling people what to do? I just don't like this class of people like running against each other in these popularity contests, and they've never done anything in their life. They've never lifted a box. They've never washed a dish. They've never written anything. They've never directed anything. I skewed toward my current audience in the last couple.
They were never nominated for a Hugo Award.
they don't know how to blow glass. They don't know how to take care of children. They don't know how to eat their own food, I doubt. I bet there's a guy that squeezes like a fireplace thing into their mouth with pudding in it or something. Or like RoboCop paste, you know? Like that's designed to keep them more political. They're not real people. They don't do anything.
Squeezes like a fireplace thing.
It's democracy. So the idea is supposed to be like the ideal is supposed to be that we would all be like farming, and then we would go, "Hey, Steve, you got to be a councilman," and Steve would go, "Fuck you! I got farming to do. Sorry, Steve, you're a very charismatic farmer. We need you to go to the big city where and make sure that they understand how hard it is to farm out here. All right, but fuck you guys. 2 years and I'm out." Exactly. It's written into the rules. And that's supposed to trickle up that mentality. Like the guy that's president should be like to everyone in America, "Fuck you for making me do this, but I will spend, because I'm an American, I will spend the next 4 years trying to make it as easy on you as possible. I'll try to keep these trains running on time." And it just, but you know, our predilection for hero worship and royalty fucking took over. And then who seeps in? These disgusting, gross, Oxford shirted, fucking, like just gross schmooze. These people, they're proto-human. They don't, none of them. And I'm sorry, but I include all your favorite people. And I think that I do. And the fact that I'm afraid to say the words "I include Obama" for fear that I'll get like politics like turns us all into fascists. You start to get afraid to say the wrong thing around your friends, and they capitalize on that instead of going the other way, which is to say, look, we all have a wolf in us. We all want to chew each other's throats out, but we're also all monkeys. Like, we all just want to fucking eat berries. So, like, let's try to spiritually realign ourselves.
Let's find the sweet spot.
Yeah, right in the middle. Like that's what humans are. We're the monkeys that survived wolves by adopting their practices a little bit. But we gotta, we you know, that's just such a bummer. Every 4 years, you just, like, it gets more and more, I get more and more crotchety, and I don't know what to do about it. The young people get so excited, and you don't want to piss on that, because like, of course Obama's a better president than some fucking clone from a Republican vat in the basement like of the Pentagon. Like, it doesn't, of obviously, but that's like saying like Diet Pepsi's better than piss. Like if it's water. Like, water is what you need. You're dying of thirst. Like, we need to sustain ourselves. We're human beings. And I feel the same way about religious debate, you know? When people go, oh, are you an atheist or are you one of these snake handler types, you know? I go, like, oh, yeah, I have to choose between those two? You guys are all on the same side. When you kneel before a fundamentalist God and, like, quiver and go, like, oh, the Bible's a newspaper. Here's what happened last Wednesday in 3000 B.C. And also when you're getting out your slide rule and going, like, well, I don't know it till I prove it. You all agree on one thing. You're all on the same side, because if I said one thing, I could make you all disagree with me. If I said Dan Harmon is God, atheists and scientists would all throw rocks at me. They would all go, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're not God. But maybe I am.
Well, these people...
Why is that not allowed? That's the Ralph Nader of religion. But for each of us, you're God. Like everyone's going, like, step right up to the taste test. Do you believe in God or not believe in God? Last name first, first name second. Do you believe in God or not believe in God? Do you believe in God? Blah, blah, blah. Do you choose between math and a story about a guy getting eaten by a whale? You have to choose. No, I don't have to choose, because both of those exist and both came out of my species' mind. I'm capable. I have a processor in my brain that's more powerful than anything Apple could ever generate, because it's capable of thinking two things at once, both equally. I am capable of creation. I am capable of mysticism. I am capable of mythology. I'm capable of approaching my life from a logical and a mythical perspective. And I'm capable of both, and you want to compromise me. You want me in shackles. Don't make me choose between Pepsi and Coke, because you're just pushing corn syrup. That's it. I feel that way about politics, and I feel that way about religion. And God damn it, I was in a good mood when I came up here. We should bring Spencer up. Spencer, get up here. Dungeon Master Spencer.
Maybe somewhere down the road. How's it going? Come on stage, Spencer. Say hello to the crowd, would you?
Let me get up here.
Yeah.
Hello, audience.
Spencer, I'm guessing you're a cat person.
Yeah, I have a cat named Jason.
I'm a cat person too. You feel like a cat to me. Like, I asked him to come up on stage. He did so unwillingly. He's neither David Spade nor is he Roberto Benigni. He's right in the middle. He's just glares at you, and if you have some kibble in your hand, he'll eat it. I love it. I don't know. I just wanted to say I love you.
Thank you.
It's hard for our kind to express love to each other, the Dungeons and Dragons people.
It's true, yeah.
Do you love me?
Yeah, I love you. I was just I was just thinking that, like, there should be a universal symbol of just, like, acknowledgement and benevolence that we could just express to one another.
So, like if you wanted people to live for a long time but also prosper,
if there was a way with that, maybe a hand signal.
Something
you could do with your fingers. Where maybe two fingers touch other two fingers.
Just to get down to the logic of it all. I agree.
Spencer, you know what it is? It's called a hug.
No, it's not. That's
the hug.
No, if you're just
hug.
Driving down the
hug.
Street and you see
hug.
A guy sit.
Hug, 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 hug. Ah. Kiss.
It's like a Greek wedding. Anyways, wait, did we derail you? Were you going to say something?
Just the symbol. The hand symbol's cool.
Yeah. I agree. I think we all agree. It's Harmontown, or we should be safe to... And in Harmontown, the new Yahtzee will be Dungeons & Dragons. You want to set up your stuff and... Is it possible to cover the time of you having to unsheathe your tomes with a recap of what happened so far?
Unsheathe your tomes.
The problem is I have it written.
Unsheathe your tomes. Oh, sorry. I don't know.
Follow your heart. Follow your heart.
Make your books naked to the world. Unbind your pages. Flip to the chapter of my heart.
You did it.
Yeah, the Television Academy agrees. Gave me an Emmy for Best Original Lyrics once. I don't know if I ever mentioned that.
What?
Anyways, we for those of you who have never been here before, Jeff and I have embarked on a historic new podcasting experiment, which is we're playing Dungeons and Dragons on our podcast. it's probably someone else is doing it, but fuck them.
It's podcast dynamite.
This guy's nodding in the front row. Are you doing it on your podcast? Is that why you're here?
No, but there's a lot of podcasts.
All right. Well, all right. Fine. He said there's a lot of podcasts. Yeah, of course there is. That makes sense. That actually makes the D&D and porn are probably the first things to arrive anywhere there's a new technology. And they're the same people asking that question. Can we use this to role play while taking a break from jerking off?
Well, we should ask him then. Like, are there pitfalls? Are there things that we should do or not do?
Well, that's a good idea. Well, let's bring him up here. Could you mind coming up?
Come on up on stage.
You won't be humiliated.
Share a mic, Carmen.
Yeah. What's your name, sir?
My name's Greg.
Greg, okay. So, Greg, you've seen Dungeons & Dragons played on other podcasts.
Yes. Okay. I've listened to it played on other podcasts.
Like Jeff said, are there things that we should avoid?
Give us some do's and don'ts for podcasting our D&D campaign.
Like, what's the biggest mistake you think has ever been made, aside from the action itself?
Greg, take your shirt off.
Nope. Oh, jeez. Okay, I've listened to a lot of role-playing game podcasts. They do live D&D games and other stuff. Generally, I stop listening to them because the people are sort of intolerable. So,
oh, interesting. Well, if that was going to stop anybody, I'd be dead by now.
Yeah.
How do we stay tolerable?
Yeah, expound on that, can you? Without making too many enemies?
Oh, yeah. What? How about this? I'm going to lower your mic.
Oh, that'll help.
What makes them intolerable?
Generally, it's people laughing too much at their own when they quote Monty Python.
Nice.
All right. Monty Python quote.
Yeah, that sort of thing. You guys are new enough that you probably don't have any in jokes from about four campaigns ago. So.
But that's an easy thing to fall into.
Yeah.
Is in jokes.
Yeah, in jokes are hard. I would suggest maybe keeping it short.
Yeah. That's like, a good rule with anything.
I missed the last one, so I don't know how this went last time, but...
Didn't keep it short.
Yeah.
We fell into your third sand trap. There was a dog leg in the first fairway, and we landed right in.
Since I'm on the spot, that did come up in line while I was
people going, I hope they don't do three chapters of the laser lights with the statues.
Yeah, I mean, having been stuck in mirror puzzle type things myself in D&D games, I would say that if I was the DM, I might lean more towards something which would allow you guys to role play and riff off each other than having to figure something out.
Right. All right, Greg.
Greg, everybody.
Greg. All right.
Well done, Greg. Thank you very much.
Well, that was a wolf in sheep's clothing, wasn't it?
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself. Spencer, catch the audience up and catch us up. Where did we leave off in our last time in our campaign?
All right. Well, I should say I was just testing the audience. I do have dice. I'm really disappointed in all of you.
He had actual dice. He pretended to lose them to see who would have dice.
Oh.
Yeah. You were just a clever pawn in my game, Jeff.
Well,
Now that's a dungeon master.
Also, that's a liar.
He's a mastermind.
All right. You've got you have your 20 side?
Yeah, I got it all.
You son of a bitch.
Don't underestimate him.
All right.
Or trust him.
Don't do either.
These are the chronicles of Sharpie and Quark, heroes whose names are etched into the very walls of fate itself, who made destiny their bitch. Our heroes were last seen hacking goblins to pieces and rearranging mirrors deep in the bowels of the trove. You are in the dark passage of a small cave, but you can see that it opens up into a great cavern. A pit stretches out before you, but you can see a rickety old bridge bridging the gap.
Oh.
Let's cross that bridge.
Yeah, I mean, if it was going to break, it would have broken by now.
Right.
I should warn you. Across the cavern lies an enormous white pig wallowing in a glimmering pile of treasure.
Wait, he's underneath the bridge?
He's across the bridge.
Oh, so if we cross that bridge, there's a white pig with some treasure?
Yep.
A living pig?
It's a gigantic pig.
A white pig?
An albino pig. You can see it.
I have a +7 against albino pigs. I'm making that up.
He's making it up. All right. Well,
Rickety bridge worries me.
Well, okay, but like I... Okay.
Craig, any ideas? Yeah, I didn't think so. It's just, yeah, it's fucking scary. Got a rickety bridge, albino pig. I want that treasure, Herman. I'm sorry.
I want that pig.
I want that treasure, Sharpie Butts-a-Lot.
I call out to the pig.
It doesn't seem to see you. It's interested in wallowing in treasure.
I think it's an illusion, but the odd thing is it's mocking us. Like, I think it's saying, hey, look, you're pigs, right? You want treasure.
Maybe because of my small size, can I get across that bridge without any trouble?
You can definitely try to sneak across the bridge.
I'm going
to
sneak across that bridge, Spencer.
All right. I'm rolling the dice.
Uh-oh.
All right, you manage to cross the bridge, but you hear a couple creaks.
But I'm across it?
You are across it.
So I probably worried about fat ass Sharpie Butts-a-Lot getting across the thing.
Not fat, I'm just not deformed.
I'm sorry, I'm a little people. Hey Sharpie, get over here, it's great.
I heard creaks, fucker. check out the pig.
I check out the pig.
The pig is wallowing in treasure. It stands a good 10 feet tall at the shoulder. Its eyes gleam yellow like topaz jewels.
Can I attack this pig?
You are far off. You're about 30 feet away. You'd have to charge it.
I'm going to charge a pig. I didn't come this far to not charge pigs. I'm a barbarian gnome.
Yeah.
I come from a long line of pig chargers.
Leaving Sharpie across on the other side of the bridge, you draw your sword and charge towards the pig.
Yep.
It stands up in anticipation of your coming strike, and as you see it, you notice a few gold coins fall from its mouth. You swing at the pig!
It's a treasure-eating pig.
You miss.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
Your blade glances harmlessly off the pig's skin. You hear a sharp tink.
Uh-oh.
I'm telling you, it's like some kind of golem or something. I gotta get over there and help my little semi-friend.
Just cross the bridge, you jackass.
Right.
I'm getting my ass kicked by an albino pig over here.
Okay, I remember from my history that I cast Featherfall on myself to get out of that tower I was kept prison in.
Uh-huh.
So I assume that's one of my spells.
You've forgotten it.
How convenient.
The pig poises, ready to strike at your friend.
All right, I bound across the bridge, by the way, with planting my full weight on each footfall.
With ease, you cross the bridge.
Ah, see?
Relatively few strides. You're across the bridge.
All right.
Now you can like attack or cast a spell.
Okay.
Or do nothing. You can wait.
All right.
Can I attack again?
It's his turn. Then it'd be the pig's turn.
Oh,
then yours.
Does sleep work on potentially inanimate pigs?
You can certainly try it.
I didn't learn anything about it.
In wizard school, you learn that if this was, in fact, some sort of construct pig, it wouldn't work. But if it was a living pig, it probably would.
Right.
But living pigs are usually not 10 feet tall.
Construct pig.
Ray of frost!
You cast ray of frost. A blue beam shoots towards the pig. The blade, or the beam connects squarely in the face of the pig.
Fuck yeah.
See, I'm not useless.
Yeah? Took you long enough to get across that bridge.
He takes 2 damage of cold.
Let's hope it's a first level giant white pig.
Okay. The pig, reacting to the beam hitting it in the face, rears up and brings its feet down on Jeff. I can't
Quark.
Talk. Yeah, Quark.
Am I okay?
Let's see.
Uh-oh.
What's your armor class?
Oh, 17. Give it to me straight, Spencer. How am I? I got a 10-foot fake pig on me.
The pig foot lands on your chest, but the armor manages to protect you.
Cling!
You are on the floor, but unharmed.
Sweet. Mm.
All right, now go. So you're on the floor, so you can get up, probably.
I'm going to get up. I get up.
You leap to your feet.
I run behind my friend. So
hightailing it away, you attempt to outrun the pig, but the pig makes a swipe at your back.
Oh,
shit.
I had my chance.
Much like the first blow, this one manages to avoid hitting you.
All right.
You escape safely.
I do have a giant sword, don't I?
Yes.
I want to attack that pig one more time.
All right. You whirl around and slash the pig in the face. You connect with the pig's face. A crack appears right across its nose.
Yeah! We'll be right back.
Is it my turn?
You can go ahead, yes.
I have to ask you a quick question as a dungeon master.
Yeah, any questions?
I have a list of spells here, and then I have check marks on some of those spells.
You can cast the ones with check marks right now. Later, you can change them.
Oops. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Magic missile.
You cast magic missile.
On the pig.
A blinding sphere of light shoots forth from your palms and strikes the pig right in its leg.
Leg?
Let me get a dice.
Aim for the face.
A dude. I'm into the arcane arts. Not...
You hit it for 4 damage.
See? Whoa. That's like twice as much as your sword, by the way.
I didn't say out loud, the sword did 7 damage.
Oh.
Right. Sorry, Sharpie.
Twice as much as my ray of frost.
Yeah.
I'm getting better. That's my point.
Your arcane magic missile strikes the pig. It is angry. It charges you, Sharpie. It's barreling right towards you. Let's see if it connects. The pig plows right into you. It knocks you up into the air. And you land flat on your back, sprawled out. You can go ahead, Jeff.
I want to kill this pig. How does a regular gnome barbarian like me kill a fake construct albino pig? Can I swipe at it again?
Can you fly into a berserker rage?
Berserk rage. I go into a rage. I fly into a rage.
As your eyes turn red, the muscles on your body bulge and ripple, increase in size.
Get a room.
You lose all capacity to listen to logic and reason. You can only take violent actions.
Let's do this thing.
You fly at the pig.
I'm gonna kill a pig.
Slashing it across the side with your blade.
Give me 20.
You got a 17. That's pretty close.
Oh, that's not bad.
You strike the pig on its flank. Its side splits open and several coins fall out. It's still on some of its on its last legs.
It's a piggy bank. I just got that. I just got that.
Look, I can't hear logic right now.
Oh, I say that aloud to.
you're talking to a crazy person right now. I'm attacking a pig. Dan, take the cork out of its belly. Is there a cork in his belly?
I examine the pig.
Good job there. You examine the pig.
Good Jew.
Yeah, good Jew.
Yeah. The enemy of the pig.
Here we go.
You do notice on its underbelly is a faint line indicating maybe some sort of seam.
Oh, come on.
It's a piggy bank.
Yeah.
Are we're fighting a piggy bank?
All right. Well,
is there a little hammer I can get a hold of? Crack it?
You can see some large rocks lying on the ground.
Ooh.
I shout out to my non-logical, hateful friend. The belly! There's a seam on its belly! Target the belly!
Your shout rings out, and he barely can manage to register it. You're not sure if he understood your full meaning.
Okay! I grab a rock and I attack the pig's belly with a rock.
You grab a sizable boulder and smash it into the side of the pig. It shatters into pieces.
Sweet.
It's full of treasure.
The whole pig?
The whole pig is destroyed.
We beat the giant piggy bank.
We beat the piggy bank! We beat a piggy bank? The whole thing was a piggy bank?
Beating the giant piggy bank was made. Yeah, that was.
Is that a metaphor for something?
It's for your destroyed innocence as adventurers.
Oh.
I just made that up right this second.
All right. Well, let's collect this treasure and wrap this segment up.
All right. You count 3,500 gold pieces in coins.
Jesus Christ.
A few gems were recovered, but you don't know their true value. Mm. You see a small jade statue of a lion. It seems to be glowing softly. It looks rather heavy, as well as a box. A wooden box.
Let's put that jade lion in the box. Get the fuck out of here.
The lion does not fit in the box.
You don't fit in the box.
Don't be defensive. Calm down, Berserker Rage.
I'm still
trying to do logical things.
My eyes are still red. I'm sorry.
You're starting to come down.
Oh, thank you.
Jesus. Take it easy.
Wow.
For future reference, don't just open boxes we find in treasure piles.
What?
Yeah.
Or do.
Open that box.
Or don't.
I'm going to open that box. I'm still illogical. I open the box.
It's full of scrolls. You don't understand.
Those are mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's obviously literati stuff.
Using your wizard eyes, you can tell that there are two scrolls of magic missile and two scrolls of burning hands.
Ooh. Nice. I'll take them.
You also see a large gold sword.
I'll be having that sword.
As you reach for the sword, you notice a warmth in the grip. You hold it aloft, and it emanates bright light.
We're talking about jerking off, right?
What's going on over there, Quark?
I'm just grabbing a warm sword handle.
Why is it warm?
I don't know. You tell me.
Is it just warm as he grabs it, or is it...
It's magic.
It's just generally warm.
Can I investigate the sword?
You investigate the sword. Its blade is a bronzy gold color, and it has runes that you don't understand etched into them. The handle is bound in green leather.
All right, here's my vote. We gather all this shit up best we can.
Take five.
Take it back to town, and we make Spencer do the grunt work of adding this stuff to our inventory.
Fantastic.
So that we can analyze it in another installment.
Look, a full day's work. We crossed a bridge.
Another day, another 3,500 gold pieces.
we killed the giant piggy bank. Spencer, everybody. Spencer!
All right, quick, Greg. Let's go to our Dungeons and Dragons segment, Judge Greg,
our man on the street,
and see how that compared to his vast compendium.
Greg, what'd you think?
That was really good. I give Spencer props. It must be really hard. The whole time I was looking over at him and just wondering, like, how he could not freak out.
All right. All right. It seemed like props. Then again, in my early stand-up days, when you wanted to fuck somebody over, if you were MC, you would come up after them and go, keep it going, folks. Comedy isn't easy. But I don't think that was the spirit in which that was offered.
You liked it, right?
We kept it short. That was sincere.
Do you have any advice for us? Like things to do or not do next time?
Sorry, I got nothing.
You were thrilled.
I'm thrilled.
You were entertained. Right. Yeah, fantastic. We did
That's
it.
Good. We had a good.
Anybody else out there have any questions? Yes, ma'am, right there.
Examine before you fight.
a young lady in the crowd says, "Examine before you fight." Look, I'm a barbarian gnome. If I examined before I fought, you know, I'd be taller.
All right. That's good advice. What's your name, ma'am?
Jen.
Jen says, examine before you fight. Let's try to hear her ethereal voice next time we enter a battle.
Examine, yeah. You should always examine before you fight, gentlemen.
I will say, in my defense, Jen, I didn't know we were in a battle until my friend charged across the bridge and attacked the pig. When I see a pig, I don't think time to fight. I think time for breakfast or a delightful Disney conversation. The last thing I thought was that we were going to be fighting it. I sent him across the bridge to test it because he's lighter.
Right.
I blame Jeff.
All right.
That's fine.
You blame me?
Yeah.
Well, I'll take it. Have you played D&D before?
No.
No.
These are life lessons.
No, that's true. Examine before you fight.
Examine?
That should be written in Latin on the Harmontown flag. Examine before you fight. Pick your battles.
Thank you very much. I want to hear a little bit about your trip to Chicago. And the Aaron gave me a couple little nuggets about the clientele at the Hugo Awards. Can I hear a little bit about that?
It was very interesting. I'll tell you, like the Hugo Awards, both at the pre. Reception.
Explain to everybody what the Hugo Awards are.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the Hugo Awards are the science fiction awards, but we were nominated for one for the Community episode Remedial Chaos Theory, which involved multiple timelines and technically qualified as science fiction, I guess, because it asks the question, what if, which is how I would define sci-fi. And we were honored, and Chris McKenna, the writer of the episode, and I went with Chris's brother and my girlfriend, Aaron, to Chicago to go to the Hugo Awards ceremony. And it was amazing to be back in the Midwest, and specifically to be back in the Midwest in a science fiction environment, because the body shapes, like, were so... I have been the fattest guy in Los Angeles for a long time. And I was like, from Krypton to Earth, like in Wreck-It, I was like, wow, I am hot. And able-bodied. Like lots of rascals, lots of leg braces, lots of scooters, lots of steampunk tanks to help people breathe, goggles, tiaras.
Those are called oxygen tanks.
Just a lot of gimmicks and things. Like it was very cool. These are my people, after all, and all of you are here. Just because we moved to LA to try to force our will on the public doesn't mean that we're extra sexy or anything. But I like to think that the Harmontown people are a nerdy people, and so I was definitely home. It's just very interesting, like the archetypes, like the rotund women who, like they want to dress fancy. Nothing is lost on them about the idea of let's have a big fancy ball, but they all like want to do like, well, fancy means Victorian or like dragon times. So everyone's kind of like wearing these costumes, like everything's as fancy as they can muster, but without buying into the bullshit like black tie paradigm, you know. So everyone's walking around. It's like Dr. Demento's walking around getting tea cakes with women dressed like just Aphrodite and no music. Never. From the moment we got there to the moment we left. And we left soon because there was no music, and we weren't like, we're too cool for this. We got there before the award show. We were told, show up 2 hours before the award show to this reception. You're in this like banquet hall, no music. Everybody like totally cool. Like they're all good people. They're all clearly like they've all been bullied, and they're all very smart, and they're all dressed to the relative nines, as per their galactic definitions of the nines. They're dressed to the nine Kelvins. Like I said, there's like octopi walking around, and that's not true. I don't want to conjure that image. You've all been to Comic-Con where there's a stormtrooper. This wasn't like that. This was like an Eyes Wide Shut, kind of back room at a real sci-fi convention, you know, where you're not allowed to, like, these are like the people that are into sci-fi books and maybe a couple movies if they're really book based. Like they like the smart stuff, and I think they like fucking. There's a lot of cleavage, a lot of taking your boobs and pouring them into things.
Like Renaissance Fair kind of stuff? At the Ren Fair, there's lots of bodices and...
It felt a little Ren Fair-y, yeah. Like in the sense that it was like, yeah, let's be fancy tonight, but let's not buy into Hugh Jackman's version of fancy.
Did they embrace you? Did they recognize you or know you?
I think we felt, I'm sure everyone felt this way, but we felt very nerdy. We felt outcast. We felt lonely.
Nerdy at the sci-fi,
right? Because we were just guys in suits, so we found a table like you did in high school, except and just found a quiet corner and sat, and then some people like made the effort to talk to us, and then we loosened up a little bit, but we felt very like outside and kind of off-put, and for good reason, because I when we checked in at the convention, the woman that checked us in said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Dan Harmon." She said, "Oh, Community. I love that show. Love that episode." I said, "Oh, thank you very much." She said, "You're not going to win." She said, "I don't mean any disrespect, but you're up against The Doctor's Wife, written by Neil Gaiman, who is the David Lee Roth of science fiction, apparently." And this episode was the Panama of Neil Gaiman things. There was just no way we were going to win. And she did me the courtesy of letting me know that as I got my name tag, which I appreciate.
Was there any rehearsal for like your interaction with the show?
Yeah. They asked that we show up early. And I've been involved in other award shows, and this has never happened. We had to show up for an orientation in case we won, which just adds to the humiliation of losing, but also it was like a real, like, it was weird. We walked in, and this woman just, she was like 5 foot, like, nothing, and like just, she had designed the award. Oh boy, I don't know how to explain this. It's like I want to impart to you guys the misery, so that you can turn it into enjoyment. But I don't know how to do it without making you miserable. Like you walk in and then you're in the space, and they explain to you how to walk upstairs. And I guess basically everyone there has Asperger's. Every single person. That's what's normal.
The attendees or the recipients?
Everyone, every single person, every security guard, every bartender, every woman that's going to hand you a trophy, or the woman that made the trophy, the people voting for the trophies, everyone in attendance, everyone has Asperger's. It's just Asperger, AskCon. And so I walked in, and they were just like, "Ah, welcome. As it pertains to the obligatory instructions, will now proceed. You see the stairs are in the center of the stage. If you win, and should you win, I will not presume that you should win. However, I should the condition that you should win. If it was an X or a gate, I suppose you might win. If you do win, please proceed in an orderly fashion up the stairs in the middle of the stage. If you try to go up the left or right stage, you will instantly break your legs, as there are no stairs." So go up the middle. There is an X marked on the stage where you would pause with the statue. Do not hold the statue. There are glass wings on the statue. Do not hold them like handles or it will shatter, and that would be a bad thing.
Investigate stairs.
I investigate the stairs. I examine the stairs.
There is a giant pig on the top of the stairs?
It was just 40 minutes of people telling you what to do should someone give you an award. And it turns out what you should do is go up the stairs. Take the statue. Thank everyone. And leave. That's what you should do, but it was just they Arthur C. Clarked it, man. Like they.
But there was no music like during the awards ceremony. Like
that. Okay, so back to that. So that was the rehearsal. We had to show up for that. That was the orientation. Then we were ushered to the back of the room where the woman who invented the awards, like or who designed them for the last 3 years, she's the genius that put glass wings on the back of a rocket ship that you can't hold them by. So it was another 40 minutes of her explaining, don't hold the rocket by the instinctive place where you would hold it if it was handed to you. And it acted like, instead of an apology, it was just like presumption. It was like, hey, fuck you for thinking you should hold this thing in any other way than the prescribed function. I just told you how to mail it back to yourself in a special box if you want it. And you did walk out of there thinking two things. Fuck, if I don't win this thing, I'm going to feel like shit. And on the other hand, I just saved myself an assload of work. She showed you how to polish it. She showed it, and everyone kept saying, like, because the statue's shaped like a rocket, don't hold it like a dick, because it looks like a dick. No one's just saying the word dick. Like, it looks like a dick. Everyone keeps making jokes about how it looks like a dick, but no one says it looks like a dick. All the women keep going, oh, yeah, they told us not to hold it like this, or clean it like this, or hold it like this. It's like, yeah, because it looks like a dick. It looks like a big silver dildo. So, like own it or fucking...
Or bone it.
Yeah, so we got the tutorial about how to clean it. This is a fucking thing that I'll never see again in my life, and now I know how to clean it and set it up and mail it to myself.
So you didn't win.
As Aaron pointed out, a simple 3x3 Xerox set of instructions taped to the bottom of the statue would have sufficed, I think. If you want to, you could have looked on the bottom. Oh, here's how I mail this back to L.A. We went through a lot of that stuff. Then we went to the reception. No music. No fucking music. Like,
was there music when people accepted the award? They didn't play them on with
no.
any.
No, I'm telling you, I'm
Doctor
taking
Who?
You through this chapter by chapter. There's three chapters to an award show: the reception, the award show itself, and then the post
after party.
No music at either of those
what?
Things at any point. Imagine an award show. First of all, imagine a reception
where
everyone's just eating tea cakes and going like, hey, what are you nominated for? I don't know. No music.
You're just standing in a room.
And then they all go, everyone come in here, come into this room. And then you go to the room and then they go, it's time for the awards.
No, it should have been
silence.
It should have been, it's a dead man's party. Who could I?
It should have been like the greatest adventure. Or the theme from Inception, or fucking anything. Like what are nerds better at than fucking like
soundtracks?
You know, yeah. Like that's what we love. I guess it would, maybe somebody complained.
You know what it was? I guarantee you, some Aspergian person was like, the tech is not good tonight. The speakers are not up to snuff. I will not play my set list with the subpar speakers. And
good news and bad news. The good news is the sound system is optimized for verbal communication. There will be no pops and whistles. The bad news is it's basically anti-optimized or de-optimized for anything other than, which happens to include tonight's selection of music, which is provided by Angela, and I wish she was not consulted about this, and so I don't know what is happening at this point in time, so I basically don't know what to do. All right, Steven, well, I guess no music then.
Or like, someone just forgot to play music, because that happens a lot.
I was thinking that somebody complained the previous year. They're like, look, I don't understand why there's music playing, you know, like some music offended them or something.
Yeah, you're Ben Folds 5. Seems to be running contrary
like
to
it. It just wasn't logical to play music. So they just all stripped it down. So this award ceremony was just a, like the trophy itself, was just a silver dildo. Just like a... just a finely shaped like thing that could just impale you.
Did anybody make any silver dildo jokes, or was it?
Well, only before and after the show.
Not during the show.
Here's what everyone did, because everyone had been instructed as we were about how to hold the trophy and how to handle it, and to not make it look like a dick when you held it. So every single person who won an award accepted it from the woman who hands you the award, and then looked at it like a soiled baby and handed it off to someone else.
Really weird.
Are you happy you went, or would you rather have not
I'm very happy I went. I got 20 minutes of me being a big fucking asshole bully out of it in my podcast. No, I don't know. No, I was happy I went. Like I said, I was honored to be there. Like, it was, as I've said, it was my big chance to lose to Doctor Who instead of Big Bang Theory for a change. Like, that's nice. That feels good. to write a sitcom that gets nominated for a sci-fi award, I'm doing something right/wrong. Now, I wanted to be there for that.
You got two TV deals with two different networks coming
Thank
up.
Thank you.
What is it? CBS and Fox, right?
Yes, thank you.
Those probably aren't going to be sci-fi shows. Do you think you could write a sci-fi show that would compete, like with the likes of Doctor Who and things like that? Like, do you think you could do it?
I think probably, because TV's big secret is like all you have to do is write a good pilot. You hire a bunch of really talented people and just like, you know, you just farm their sadness. I don't think there's anything that's impossible in TV, because no way. It's the Henry Ford principle. Like, do you think it's possible to make a jetpack? Yeah, if you put enough Korean people in a warehouse and starve them to death, yeah, you can. If you murder enough people, you know,
that's the Henry Ford theorem.
Yeah, if you chain enough human life together and make each person do one small thing, like, yeah, you can do anything.
You're saying you could write a sci-fi show if you put enough Korean people in a warehouse.
Yes, yes. That's my promise to you tonight. On this election eve.
Sponsored by Nike.
Wasn't it Archimedes who said,
Koreans in a warehouse. give me 100 Koreans in one warehouse. And I can
and,
write
and
you
I will give you a hit UPN show.
If you could write, off the top of your head, if you could write a sci-fi show, what would the premise be?
I would either do it. Just my first answer would be time travel in general. I love time travel. I'd love to do a time travel show.
Do it.
Fuck you, lady.
No. That's the investigate before you fight.
Sorry. Hey, examine before you yell out, do it. No, what she really meant, that was a reverse heckle. That was a high road heckle. She's like, do it, get off stage. Go write something. That's why.
Get us out of here.
I agree with you. Time travel, I'd love to do.
Why time travel particularly?
I don't know. I just think that's
what's the wish fulfillment in time travel? Because there must be, right?
Well, no, I don't know.
What's the fetish of time travel for you?
Well, no, because you would say no. I think empowerment. That's what it is. Like, if I could go to any time, I was fantasized about like if my whole garage with all of the stuff that was in my Prius got transported to 1920, then not only I'd be like, I could be like Batman, because I'd have a Prius.
What do you have on that Prius?
And I'd just be competing with like Machine Gun Kelly. He'd have like this shitty old car.
And a machine gun. He'd still kill you.
I know. I didn't think my fantasy through, Jeff. Because I also got like, oh yeah, I'd have GPS. No, I wouldn't. The satellites wouldn't be there. Yeah, but I just think that's a cool idea.
It wouldn't have the right octane.
If you were somehow just a normal guy in 1920s Chicago, I think that would be cool. If you were like, you had to like dress up in a suit and you're like, I don't know. Yeah, wish fulfillment. That's everybody's, like, yeah, everyone has a time that they'd like to go to.
We all have the fantasy of going back, like, oh, fuck, what if I was like, if I knew what I knew now and could go back to like junior high school, I'd be the coolest guy in the world. But still, I would still be bad at math. I couldn't save anybody's life. I'd be bad at all the
also,
fundamentals.
You'd be the biggest loser in the world. Like you would be more honest with girls. Well, you'd be a bigger loser. Like you would, there would be a couple things that you would nail, and then everything else would fall apart that ever went together for you. Well,
there's your movie.
Well, I think that was called Happy Gilmore. Or wait, no, what was the other one? Happy Madison, Billy Gilmore, Billy Madison. I think Adam Sandler was in it. He went back to school and he went with his jean jacket and his AC/DC music and he found out that you wouldn't be cool in high school.
Oh yeah, I never saw that.
Yeah, because high school is its own culture. It's based on. It's not based on any actual empirical thinking. It's based on the hormonal and like in the moment thing of like a bunch of young people. They're right and we're wrong.
So, Greg, how's Dan doing right now as a podcast?
I have the feeling you're looking for a way to end your podcast.
Yeah. He's right.
Yeah, a better comptroller would have ended the show right there, but I'm not going to do it.
Oh, all right. All right. Let's figure this out.
No, that's okay. Anybody have a question? Anybody like to...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Raise your hand. Okay, there. Shout it out.
Your Nike sponsorship. Please.
Nike sponsorship. He's calling out for a callback to the Nike sponsorship.
Yeah, well, he's talking about... what's your name back there?
Daniel.
Daniel asks, what happened to our Nike sponsorship thing? I think we have to figure out how to do that. We were trying to strong-arm Nike into giving us money, or actually any sponsor, by saying that Nike were terrible people and then promoting Adidas.
Yeah, we should probably hit that real quick. Everybody buy Nike because you're racist. Yes, Nike. The delicious shoe for the foot of the Aryan nation.
You know, Dan, while you were talking about Nike and their overt racism, I was thinking about how comfortable I am tonight and my Adidas... It's a new shoe called the Adidas made by Puma. It's the new Puma Adidas. We can't fucking do this, right? We need a sponsor is what we're saying. Someone's
all
sponsor.
We got all tangled up. We the answer to your question, Daniel, is we fucked up. We tangled in forces.
We tried to strong arm Nike, but Nike doesn't give a shit.
We tried to out avenue Madison Avenue.
Yeah, we tried to out avenue an avenue.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
They're already an avenue. Yeah. They don't care.
Yeah, I tried to stab a piggy bank earlier. We don't fucking know what we're doing.
Welcome to failure.
Any other questions? Anybody have a question for Dan Harmon? Right here, sir. Yes?
Is Kettle One your drink of choice, or is that just for bulk drinking?
Is Kettle One your drink of choice, or is it just for bulk drinking?
It's my drink of choice. Therefore, I drink it in bulk.
Why Kettle One?
You can sense everyone's excited. They're like,
yeah.
This is an ending!
No, it's like that.
You guys want to help. You're like, and it's a closer!
I used to go bodyboarding when I was in high school, and like you would be out in the ocean, and you get so tired, and like sometimes a wave would kick your ass, and you'd almost drown. Like, just give me one good wave to take me back into the beach.
Yeah. I'll get on its side. Like, it doesn't have to be great.
I'll
still say cowabunga, no matter what. You know,
I'm gonna roll into a ball. Just get me back to the beach safely.
You know, Dino's daughter got stung by a stingray.
Yeah, Dino Stamatopoulos' daughter got stung by a stingray. The same animal that killed.
Steve Irwin.
Yeah, if it stings you right, it'll fucking kill you. Yeah. Even if you're an alligator
and
wrestler.
By all accounts, it's bloody fucking painful to get stung by a stingray.
And she's been stung by a jellyfish, and she got her finger ground in like a meat grinder on a field trip. Like
And the same week that she got stung by a stingray, our friend's daughter, who is what, 12, 13, 14? What is she? Somewhere around that, right? Around 12 years old? Come on, Dan, help me out.
Wait, who are you talking about? What are you talking
Tigger.
About? Right.
Our friend's daughter. How old is she?
Oh, 12, 13.
Yeah, I don't know. She got...
Well, watch out. I can't wait to hear the recording. She's 12, 13.
The same week that she got stung by a stingray and screamed bloody murder, and it's very painful. She also dove into a pool and did a flip and scraped her face off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And got in a car accident. It's like they were like backing out and someone like they were parked. And somebody sideswiped them, and they like her and her mom got whiplash. Same week.
She's marked for death. She's it's like the final destination. Thank you,
final
ma'am.
Final destination.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking of, the Final Destination movie, which, by the way, are surprisingly good. You would never think on paper. Applause, yes, for the... In a post Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, we went too far with the who's next? He's got forks for toes. His name's Steven. Like, we kept trying to come up with an understated. Well, Jason, Freddy, Mark, Kyle,
Douglas.
Douglas. Douglas loves fire. He's got fire feet. Obviously, that had to give. And the Final Destination is pretty. On paper, you go like, oh, these kids. They go, you know, in the beginning of each of these movies, they go, ah, we're kids. We love having sex and the let's get on the roller coaster, and then someone goes like, wait, I gotta tie my shoe, don't get on the roller coaster, and then they don't get on it, and then they let's take pictures of each other like in so we can rip off the Damien thing, and then the roller coaster like crashes, and burp, big 9/11 thing happens, and but then one kid goes looking at the pictures and goes like, whoa, all your faces are like fucked up, or there's a shadow of a thing, like we were supposed to die on that roller coaster, now everyone who's the whole movie is every kid who is supposed to die on the thing gets killed by like a nail gun, or their dad closes the garage door on their head. Welcome to your grandpa reviews movies. No, I have more to say. Don't force that ending. So die. You see, he almost pressed play. Fuck you.
I had my finger on the trigger, and yet I think you can do better, and I think they deserve worse. No, this is the Final Destination.
We're not accepting charity.
We're going to be here for fucking 3 more hours. Yeah, we're going to serve breakfast.
I'm just saying, those are surprisingly good movies. I think I caught like 2 and 5. I don't know.
I've never seen them.
They're
no idea.
They're pretty good, man.
Have you heard about or seen this movie, Martyrs? Has anybody seen that piece of shit? One person backstage. Anybody out there?
There's two Margers out there?
Two Martyrs.
Margers?
Martyrs. Like a martyr.
I thought it was about like loose leaf.
No.
This is 3.5 inches.
My advice to you is it French, right? Like the director is a French film. My advice to you is don't see it. Do not see it. Unless you like misogynistic French directors beating women for fucking 13 years and then ending on a kind of like oops, we did it. Like that's the movie. Somebody fucking gave me that movie. A bartender at the fucking drawing room gave me that movie. Like, Jeff, you like weird movies? Watch Martyrs. It's crazy. Get to the end. I watched it halfway through. I texted her. I was like, I hate you, and I hate everyone you know, and I hate this movie. And if I ever see you, I'm gonna do to you what this movie did to me, and I'm going to beat you and tie you and feed you pea soup and beat you to death like the fucking women they do in it, skin you alive, and then have no ending. And then I watched the ending. I'm like, okay, it's a pretty good ending. But don't watch the movie. Don't fucking watch Martyrs.
Well, Jeff.
When you watch the DVD, they gave me the DVD that you can't fucking... It's not in stores. It's not... You can't go to your fucking... It's not on Netflix. And there's a good reason, because it's fucking... It's an atrocity. And I watched the movie, and I've never seen a movie... The DVD options are play movie, subtitles, audio options. One of them was play movie... Play movie with director introduction. That's I've never seen that. And there's a little kind of chubby French guy goes like, he's standing by like his collection of DVDs. So there's like you know like everything that Quentin Tarantino did, and you know like he's like, I'm sorry that you have to watch this movie. If you went online and watched the scenes and reviews on the internet, I wish you had not. I wish you come in as a virgin and do not watch the come in just open. I'm sorry for what I made. And he spends 10 minutes apologizing for his movie. I'm glad I watched that, because if I didn't, I would never have watched it. If I see him, I'm still going to kick him in the dick. Don't watch Martyrs.
Well,
but do.
Well, Jeff, I'm glad that this came up. And in fact, I knew it would, because tonight has been a labyrinthine manipulation to get it to come up, because the director of Martyrs is actually here in the front row. Here
Let's
he comes.
Let's bring out Jean-Claude Van Pichon.
What's wrong? What's the problem? I already apologized in the thing.
I just feel like you hate women.
I love women.
Well, yeah. How come only women get beaten up and the men never do?
Because they are there. Why climb Mount Everest? It's the beautiful women are their ability to be beaten is an expression of postmodern alphabet.
Postmodern alphabet. What would a postmodern alphabet be? Well,
it'd be like a woman. It'd be like the figure eight of the violin, or the curves, or the femininity. The beautiful punchable parts.
Now, I feel like because it's only women being tortured, brutalized, and beaten to death to the point of like within an inch of their life, and actually to death. The fact that you made the bad guy a woman seems like an apology. That seems like you're just trying to get away with misogyny by making the main bad guy also a woman.
Touche. End the show.
Wait. Point at me and yell it. Point at me and yell it, Dan. Do it. Do it. Okay. Point at me and yell it.
He should have ended the
show.
I'll do it.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
No. It's too late. It's too late.
No. I want you to beg for it, you piece of shit. You're like a woman strapped to a chair, forced to poop in a bucket. You're martyring yourself right now. I want to see the look on your face when you die.
I'm borrowed from the masters, the Eli Roth, the Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, Sam Peckinpah. Again, anybody want to see Sam Peckinpah films?
Sam Peckinpah. Zero. Welcome to the fucking Thunderdome.
Sam Peckinpah, known as a great director. However, in every fucking movie he made, and enjoyed rape.
Rape is justified.
Rape is not
a case for rape.
Yeah, not just justified, but women fucking like, maybe, yes. Oh, my hero.
Oh, now that
fucking boo. That guy is fucking gross. Sam Peckinpah, yeah, Wild Bunch, it's a good movie, but still, fucking that guy, creepy. How about this? Gentlemen, there are men.
There's got to be a way to guarantee a closer.
There are men in the audience.
Let's have a costume contest.
Costume contest?
Yeah.
On a podcast?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
No, that's right. That's a bad idea.
Let's do it. Yeah, I would say that if you're a gentleman out there that's a writer, TV, screenwriter, films.
Come up and knock my hat off. Hear your idea.
Zach back here, our tech guy, wants you to rap.
Wrap up the show.
Well, wrap up the show.
Oh, rap like an art form, like a Nelly, someone called.
Well, how about this, Dan? Let's see if I can pull this off here. I'm gonna pull up Johnny Cash. we're gonna do a Johnny Cash song. Think about summing up the show right now.
Here's an interesting topic. I bet you could break this room into two groups of people. People who like keep listening to different songs, and then I'm in the other group. Do you just like? Do you land on a song and it doesn't like you just wear it out, or just like put it on a loop and you're just like fucking song, and you get a little embarrassed about it? I remember when I was a kid, my dad, because we're right now just to equate myself with this, like because we were playing Rockstar and that song by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, like wait, they don't love you like I love you, wait, they don't love you. I fucking love that song so much. I just keep playing it over and over, and I remember my dad, when my parents separated, he kept playing Turn Around Bright Eyes, like
Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah. Total Eclipse of the Heart. Yeah. Parentheses. Turn Around, Bright Eyes. I remember being in my room, like 10 years old, and like hearing that song on a boombox in my kitchen, like living alone in a house with my dad, and like just hearing that song just kept playing over and over again, and I couldn't leave the house. I wanted to go play. I was at that point finally willing to play baseball. I was like, I would do anything to get out of my room, but I couldn't leave because any path would take me past my father, who I could hear was playing Eclipse of the Heart like on a loop. It was really weird.
So you're saying the house was like a powder keg and giving off sparks?
Wait, what? I don't know.
I really need you tonight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I blocked it out. I don't know, but it kept playing.
Come one, Harmon.
Which one is this?
I'm sorry, this show was bad. I'm sorry, it went bad. I'm sorry, it got slower.
And that you rhyme bad with bad?
Thank you, Jeff Comptroller, for siding with negativity. I guarantee this won't be a closer.
Because it's impossible to rhyme with negativity.
Nativity.
Good night, everybody. We fucking did it. Thank you for coming to Harmontown once again.
No! No!
All right?
No. No.
I
know.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that.
There will be a real closer. It'll be genuine. Matter. I'm defiant.
I was going to end that motherfucker.
No, it doesn't matter. You can end on anything. You can. These people have all been at things that have ended badly. I don't accept that ending. There's got to be a new way. All right. Okay. All right.
There's no way out.
All right.
You're on your own.
There's got to be a way out.
There's no way out.
There's got to be a way out.
No, these people are hostages.
No, there's a way out. There's a way out. All right.
We're all, guys, fucking settle in. This is it.
All right. You, sir, what's your name?
Andy.
Andy. Okay. Andy, what's your favorite comfort food?
That's tough. That's tough, Andy says.
Steak.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy likes steak. Okay.
All right.
All right. What's your name, sir?
Jason.
Jason. Okay. What is your least favorite food?
Seafood.
Seafood. Okay. All right.
Andy likes steak. Jason hates seafood.
And that is the title of the movie I'm about to improvise.
Do you want theme music or you're good?
Theme music, please. Obviously.
No, hang on. We can do better than that.
Sir, something's gone wrong. What is it, Jason? It's the steak. It's threatening all the seafood. Let's get out there and rectify that situation. Yeah, I was coming here to suggest that. I can't go over your head. Look, I wasn't saying that you should. Sir, is there something wrong? Yeah, I get insecure. I feel like I got promoted before you. Don't let that worry you. I've always respected you. I know that. Let's get out there. Get in the Jeep. The steak Jeep? Tom Clancy Chiron, Steak Zone, Sector 7. Incoming seafood! Let's go fuck up some seafood, motherfuckers! Gentlemen, Sector 7 is clear. All in the steak zone say hoo-ah, hoo-ah. I suggest we camp out for the... What was that? I got movement. What? Stand down, Lieutenant. No, sir, I got movement. You will silence yourself. We're going on R&R. Our hubris is primary. We will relax. We will not pay attention to any incoming data. But, sir, I don't... Seafood! Oh, shit! Oh, my fucking asshole! Oh, I'm getting it ripped out of my pussy! Oh, my intestines! Oh, shit! Obamacare, Mitt Romney, hot buttons, Monica Lewinsky, cigars, got milk, closer! To rip the fucking roof off this place. Mic drop. Sorry.
Oh boy, Dan Harmon. everybody. In an unclosable show, he closed it. Keep your applause going if you would for Katie Levine, our audio recorder, Zach McKeever, our tech, Emily Gordon, our producer of the live show, Daniel Kramer, program director, Dustin Marshall, podcast producer, Mo Fathelbaff, on-site director, Jenny Fine, our fine artist. I've been Jeff Davis. This is Harmontown. Thank you all for coming. Spencer, our dungeon master.
Thank you, guys. You're great. Very patient. Thank you. Sorry.
Greg, our dungeon master assistant. God bless you all for suffering through what might be the greatest night in podcast history. Let's all get drunk together, won't we? We love you. Xanadu. Xanadu.